Excuse me, this is the operator. The recordings have started.
Great, thank you very much. Good morning or afternoon, everyone. This is Jeff Newman, the chair of the Policy Development Process Work Team of the PPSC for a meeting on May 29th, I believe, 2009. If I could turn it over to Glenn to just do a roll call of who's on.
Thank you, Jeff, certainly. We have on the call James Bladel, Paul Diaz, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, Mike Rodenbach, Brian Winterfeld, and Greg Ruth. And I don't see anybody else on the Adobe Connect that I haven't mentioned. And for staff, we have Liz Gaster, Margie Madam, Marika Koenig, and Glenda Saint-Gerie. Have I left off anybody? I know Gabriel sent me a note yesterday to say that he would be joining probably on the Adobe Connect.
Okay. All right, well, and we're also waiting for Thomas to join us, Thomas Norton to join us, so if you could just let me know when he joins.
I'll do that.
Great. Well, welcome everyone from a little bit of a absence for the last few weeks of meetings. Good to have some more people show up, so I'm hoping that means that the workload is lessening for you guys or that the less frequent calls are helping. So what we wanted to do today, and if you're on Adobe Connect, you could see a document, is first what we want to do is just get a little bit of an update from some of the staff members that are on the call as to where the restructuring is and maybe some of the progress of the other groups as to where they are and kind of what our thoughts are for Sydney, which is in just a few weeks. Also to talk about, the second thing to talk about is document that you see in front of you that was sent around a few days ago or maybe even a week ago by staff as to some of their thinking and how we progress further. And when Thomas Norton joins to actually, because he only has a little limited time with us, is maybe interrupt where we are at that point so that Thomas Norton could talk about the paper he wrote, the internet draft that he wrote for the IETF on a birds of a feather meeting, which really relates well to the issues that we've been discussing about initiating a request for or the planning initiation phase even before a working group is created or even whether to determine a working group is created. I think I've read the paper a couple times and I think it's really helpful for a number of those key points, and since Thomas is also an ICANN board member and is familiar certainly with the ICANN processes, he could let us know how that all relates to the ICANN world or if it relates. So given that, is there any question on some of the topics that we'll cover? Okay, so I'm going to ask Liz, Marika, Margie, if you could just, I guess maybe Liz, provide an update of some of the discussions that are going on around restructuring and where we are on that.
Sure. So very briefly, there are a number of other GNSO improvements activities going on simultaneously. Key among them is the council restructuring planning and the final arrangements for that. You probably know that there was the hope and expectation that the new council would be seated in Sydney, and there is still continuing work to be done on defining the role of stakeholder groups and defining the role of constituencies going forward in the new council. And so there are continuing decisions and discussions that the board needs to make, and it's now presumed that the council will be seated in Seoul, and the new council, and not Sydney. So the key question for us in that regard is, whether there are any impacts to this group or dependencies, which we've discussed before, but it's something to keep in mind. There are also four other work teams under the GNSO improvements. In the PPSC, There is, of course, this PDP redesign team, but there's also a team looking at working groups and what the operations of working groups should be. That team is chaired by J. Scott Evans, as you know, and they have divided into two subgroups that are developing guidelines, first on working group charters and guidelines for the council itself in considering, you know, what elements to consider when creating and guiding working groups, the tasking of working groups, the defining of what the objectives of a working group would be, and then guidelines also for how the working group itself would operate, which would be guidelines for the working group chair and participants, including kind of structuring the working group, the tasking, how reporting, periodic reporting, and delivering outcomes. And so that work team is developing initial outlines for these deliverables and candidly is at a fairly nascent stage of that process, although they have defined these two deliverables. And then on the OSC, the Operations Steering Committee, which is chaired by Chuck Gomes, there are three work teams underway, one dealing with the operations of the GNSO Council itself, which is focused on the role of the GNSO Council as a kind of strategic manager of the policy process, changing the council from more of a legislative body that the way the council's thought of today, and more into a strategic manager role, as well as developing new statements of interest for that group. There is a constituency and stakeholder operations team that has several sub-teams that are looking at constituency and stakeholder group charters and elements for a constituency toolkit, services that ICANN could provide to constituencies to help them function more efficiently and effectively. And then there's a communications team that's focused on improving the GNSO website, improving translations processes, but also really looking at communications broadly between the GNSO and the other SOs and ACs and with the community and how to strengthen those activities. So those are just a snapshot of all the teams that are underway, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, thank you, Liz. Anybody have any questions for Liz? But just to summarize, although this group had a due date of having a final report by Sydney, I think given the fact that the council is not going to be seated till Seoul, given the progress and the contributions, I think it's safe to assume that that's no longer required of us.
More realistic.
Right. That's good. But that being said, I think it's important to just, you know, discuss amongst the group what our output is for Sydney, you know, what our goal is, and maybe I can just have Marika talk about the document she presented and sent around as to what she tried to do in this document and how we could push it forward to have kind of an output for Sydney. Marika, do you want to talk about the document?
Yeah, I can just briefly say a few words about that. The document was indeed sent out last week, and then you can see it as well on the Adobe Connect. This is basically an attempt from our side to try to bring together different elements from the discussion, the notes pages that we developed, the staff paper, as well the notes we took from the brainstorming session, and trying to bring that all together into one document, which we hope might facilitate and structure the discussion further towards working towards a solution. So basically, as it looks like, you'll find in the first column, basically the issue outlined that we're looking at addressing. The second one basically indicates what is the current practice and rules. Then we've tried to add a column which basically highlights the concerns and questions, because we think it might work easier if we try to address these questions. If we can get a consensus around the answer to these questions, it might be easier as well to come to an agreement on what kind of solution would be appropriate. So the fourth column looks at the notes from the calls and how our discussions. Then, you know, going forward, we hope to have another column where we would actually work out this proposed solution. And the last one is basically just a placeholder for now, saying if we come to a proposed solution, should that be covered in the bylaws or should that be in another kind of document, or where would that be placed? So this is really just a first draft, and, you know, we just would like you to review it, see if you think this might help the discussion, and especially add in any information you feel is missing or should be added in order to have have a good discussions around these different issues. And I think the idea would be if the group would feel that this is a workable approach, it might be something we can use as well for the other stages that, are still coming after the planning and initiation phase. So that's it. I don't know if anyone has any specific questions. I don't know if people already had the time to actually review the documents.
Is there any questions from Marika? One thing I want to say while I'm waiting to see if anyone has any questions, either speak up or raise your hand on Adobe, and we'll get to you. I do want to say that all of the notes that are relevant to this planning initiation phase are represented in that last column. And I do think the concerns and questions, answering those will give us more clarification to actually write the proposed solution. I mean, some of the ones from the notes, we actually do have recommendations on. Some of the ones we just noted, there are concerns, and we need to figure out how to come up with some solution to those. So, like, if you look at the first item, for example, who has the right to request an issues report? The bylaws have a certain requirements as to who can initiate, and putting aside the thresholds of how, for the council initiation, putting aside that, the group basically decided that the recommendation from the group on the calls that we've had was, look, we don't really want to change where the request to initiate this policy process would come from. So, that's already, kind of a good, pretty concrete. I mean, I don't know if anyone wants to reopen that, but that was pretty much what was decided by the group. But we also talked about things as to whether we should have a formal mechanism to allow parties other than the ones who are mentioned, other than the board, the council, or advisory committees, to have a way to actually bring up a topic for the GNSO to consider. There was nothing final on that. I think most of that discussion really focused around, just to summarize what happened. It was, well, they should have a right. They should know people who are in constituencies, at least in the council, constituencies or stakeholder groups, to be able to take issues to them and raise up, they should have some threshold to raise some interest within at least one of those stakeholder groups so that, they could, or with an advisory committee, so that they can get the issue to be discussed at least at this stage. There were things like, the anti-phishing working group, ISOC, and other groups that, may want to make suggestions as to, policy work. But again, the recommendation that we came up with was we're keeping the three mechanisms the way they are, as far as either coming from the board, the council, or the advisory committee. So, that's kind of an assimilation of what's in the first column of the first issue. And then what we would need to do now, considering those additional questions that came from other comments that were made either on the mailing list or the policy paper, is the current language in the bylaws refers to initiation of a PDP when the issues report is requested. I think the terminology is confusing, and we already talked about kind of changing the terminology and differentiating between when a process is initiated versus when a PDP is initiated. Any comments or questions on that? Again, I really think we've covered on a lot of the calls, we've covered topics, one. I think two is something we will need to talk about a little bit again. But, we've covered things like topics one, four, six, we've covered to some extent. It's some of the other ones, like number two and others, that I think we really need to delve into. Hearing silence. See, everyone's fully awake today. Even the laughter. Nothing. Okay. So why don't we get into number two, I think, because we haven't really. I just want to make sure we're good with number one. It seems like it's moving forward. Number two is the procedures for requesting an issues report. We do have some of this defined in the new threshold, and actually maybe Marika, we can update update it with the new thresholds in there.
Okay.
Right, so, I mean, the board is still the board. They still go through the same thing, but the council, obviously, is you know, that threshold will, once the new structure takes place, that's no longer 25% of the members present of the council.
What is it?
What's that?
What is it?
The threshold to for initiation initiation of an issues report?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So, Liz, do you have that handy?
I will in just a sec.
It yeah. I wish I don't have that handy at the moment. But it's essentially either, I think it's 60% of one house, I'm sorry, of, or majority of both houses, or, no, I'm wrong. Sorry. I'm going to wait for Liz. I'm thinking about it, and then I know I have it wrong.
I mean, maybe we can just keep talking, and it'll take me
yeah.
a minute.
So there is a new threshold that we'll update in there, but it's basically a certain percentage of both houses. Like, you know, for example, you have to have X percent in the contracted party's house and X percent in the non-contracted party's stakeholder group. I'm sorry, the house. Or it's a certain higher percentage of one of the houses. And I'm not, Liz will look up that the threshold.
Okay. Right, so the bylaws are going to need to be changed on this anyway, so we've cleared up the language about initiating PDP.
Say that again, Mike.
So there's language in here that says that each of these people can initiate a PDP, but really it's just can request an issues report. And the key, whether it's initiated PDP, is the next step later.
Correct.
Yeah, that's another sort of just cleanup almost clarification that we want to make in the bylaws, I think, because it talks about sort of initiate the language of initiating a PDP in a couple different places sort of incorrectly. It was something Alan's talked about, too, on these calls. So.
Okay.
Jeff, it's Marge. I have the language if you want it. The creation of an issues report requires more than 25% of both houses or a majority of one house. And then authorizing initiation of a working group charter is 33% of both houses or more than 66% of one house. Approve a PDP recommendation without a supermajority requires a majority of both houses and further requires that one representative of at least three of the four stakeholder groups supports it. And then approving a working group recommendation with a supermajority requires greater than 75% majority in one house and majority of the other house.
Okay, so getting back to the, thank you, Margie, getting back to the issues report, you know, one thing we've never been able to do yet, and I really challenge people, is to come up with a name of the overall process versus the formal PDP process, because we've kind of confused the terms in this language. But, Mike, you're exactly right. So obviously the wording of the bylaws are changing, as Margie talked about, to reflect that, we'll need to recommend that. But as far as, is there anything else that we would want to change as far as how they initiate it? I mean, is it just, you know, the board basically just sends a note to council and says, okay, there's a resolution passed? I don't think the board's ever actually initiated a PDP. Or an issues report. Has the board ever even requested an issues report?
It's Liz, not that I know of.
Right.
No, not that I know of either, Jim.
And sorry, go on.
Okay, with the ALF.
Yeah, not that I know of either.
Okay, and then, sorry, Mike?
So the ALF has done so.
Right, so the advisory committees have.
And there has been confusion around how an advisory committee can request, because I remember when the ALAC requested the issues report for the post-expiration domain name recovery issue, people wanted, should the council then first approve, or can they directly request? And the bylaws are still vague. I think they're being interpreted as once an advisory committee requests, that's it. The council cannot say anything about it or doesn't need to do anything. It's just requested. They just need to acknowledge or you know, just recognize that the request was received. So that might be an area where maybe more clarity might be welcome, so it's clear for advisory committees how they can initiate that, you know, they just need to basically submit the request and that's it. There's no further vote required or anything like that. I don't know if that's something to be considered.
Well, so there's two different issues behind that, right? I mean, what the bylaws say is that they can initiate a PDP. We could make a recommendation that they could certainly initiate an issues report, but not necessarily a PDP, or we could recommend the other way, that they could both request the issues report and kind of override a council vote for a PDP. So I want to throw that out to the group as to what the thoughts are. I mean, I know Alan's not on the call. It would have been nice to have him give his thoughts on the issue. I'm sure he's got some on it. But, you know, what do people think? I mean, Mike?
Well, I think we should ask the SBAC, too. But I think generally an advisory committee should not be able to force work upon the council. We have enough, you know, we have enough of our own work to do. An advisory committee is always free to start their own working group, for example, if they really want to look at an issue. So I think there should be some gating going on where the council decides what to do.
And it's Liz. Just to be clear, I don't think the GAC and I know the FSAC have never requested an issues report, but it's something the FSAC has talked about recently.
I mean, the FSAC has said we think the GNSO should address this, or you know, they might not have said GNSO, but they do definitely say that we think this should be addressed. And a lot of times, there have been times where the council has then taken that and started the process, but it's really a council initiation as opposed to the FSAC initiation. Mike, let me just drill down on that. So let me separate the two things. So you said that they shouldn't be able to force the GNSO to, it sounded like you were saying, well, you said basically to do work, but do you think that's both the case for an issues, what about just requesting an issues report, and then the council could still vote, you know, to initiate a working group on it?
Right. Well, then that's really a staff issue. I mean, then they're forcing work on the staff, and that's fine. It seems to me they should be able to request an issues report. So, right, and then, yeah, that would get reported to the council, and then the council would decide what to do about it, if anything.
So if I can just be clear about what the bylaws require today and allow today. So today the board or any advisory committee can request an issues report, and it will be done automatically. There's a notification to the GNSO, but staff does the issues report at their request. Following the issues report, and there's this ambiguous language about initiating a PDP both times, but when you're actually initiating a PDP, when an issue is, if a PDP is requested by the board, the council will meet and do so within 15 calendar days, no vote, no intermediate vote of the council. But if an advisory committee or other group requests a PDP, the council does vote on whether to initiate the PDP, the actual PDP. So I'm making a distinction now between the issues report, where it happens automatically at a board request or another advisory committee request, and the actual launch of a PDP, which only happens automatically if the board requests it today.
Right. I think that's what Mike's saying should continue to be the case, but we just need to clarify the language. We need to get rid of words like commence the PDP. And those words just make it really ambiguous.
Right. So that's
noted. That's right. I agree with that. And then also, just another minor point is in D about council present at any meeting. I think there should just be clarified there that that's subject to our proxy voting rules. Because I believe now you can vote. You can be not present at a meeting and vote on initiation of an issues report or PDP.
Or an alternative, that's one alternative, certainly a good one. The other alternative is to let each house set up its own rules on how it reaches that percentage. That could be a recommendation. I'm not saying one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even have to say members of the council present. It could just say 25% of the members of the house.
Council.
Or it's actually 25% of both of the houses is what it says now. or whatever percent it is of one of the house, of one house.
Right, 51%.
Right.
Okay.
So is that so one recommendation, so the one recommendation is just strike the words of the members present.
Doesn't have any meaning. Yeah.
Anyone else have any thoughts? I know I don't want to put people on the spot, but a bunch of people on the call. Ryan, Greg, James, Paul.
I think that's a pretty minor point on proxy. We have lots of New Year issues we could talk about.
Yeah, no, I just wanted, that's why I wanted to see if there's any other comments, and then we just take note of it, write it down, and I think we're good. Now, question 2B, there's no requirements at this point as to what this request would contain, like what kind of information is required. Do we think there should be a template, such and or something of defining the issue, identification of the problem, any supporting evidence, or even a statement of why should this be considered policy development? And we've talked about pre-work done by the council, or in the GNSO, but we haven't talked about whether, you know, there should be anything required of the board or an advisory committee when they recommend an issue report be created.
What do you mean we talked about it with reference to the council?
Not necessarily council, but within the GNSO, we talked about a bunch of... Actually, you know what? We haven't. I'm mixing up things of when... I'm looking at question 4, which is in the creation of the issues report. We actually talked about two types of things where there's, and maybe Marika, we need to kind of separate these things out, where it was basically even before an issues report is created, there was a discussion of the, that there should be the light, what was called the light issues brief, which is really just the proposed issue raised for consideration, the identity of the party submitting the issue, the main dimensions of the issue, those elements we talked about it should be kind of in the request to create an issues report. Marika, Liz, jump in if you think I'm...
I think it's further down. It's further down in this document, I believe.
Yeah, it's number 4. It's in number 4. So...
But these are two different things, because this is indeed what needs to be in the issues report, but when either a member of the council or an advisory committee sends in a request, it really varies. Sometimes it's one sentence, and sometimes they provide like 5 pages of you know, explanation as why they should be explored. So this is just a question, and I think at least speaking from staff, I think it would be helpful to have some kind of information already at that stage, because normally the party requesting an issues report will have some kind of information or evidence why they feel an issue should be considered. So maybe providing some kind of template or some kind of, you know, information checking to make sure that, you know, there's some underlying ground to the request might be helpful.
So just to go back a few weeks, Marika, and I think it's just maybe placement of where we put this in the document, but it was Bertrand's recommendation, and a bunch of people agreed that the first item, the first the light issues brief would actually predate an issues report.
But would that be the request, or that would be actually the first product? Because there are two different things. I agree that we talked about, and I think we listed now, I've listed now under, like, you know, how an issues report should look, and maybe that needs indeed two elements, where the lightweight and the, but this is, this number 2 is really talking about the request, when the council member puts something up for a discussion or a vote. How should that look? Is it enough that it's just 2 lines saying I want an issues report on fast clock? Or would it be helpful at that stage if there's already some kind of supporting evidence saying I want a report on fast clock because I've seen the ASAC report, I've seen this and this and this? I mean, it's an open question.
So, and I'll let Mike jump in a sec. What was discussed, and it looks like James as well, what was discussed was that it would be part of the, it would be pre-asking the staff to do an issues report. So it would be as part of the request, just those items. Right. Now let me.
But it would be staff. I mean, just to clarify, that would be staff's work. It wouldn't be the requester having to provide that information. Or that's open still.
Yeah, I think that's open. But let me go to James and then Mike.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks. And I apologize if I'm covering territory that we've already been over, but I was just wanting to support the idea of a template to submit when requesting an issues report, and that could possibly include different sources of information or background on the issue that's under review. So that can include different groups within the ICANN community or possibly outside experts that could be consulted. And perhaps even some non-binding guidance on what is and what is not part of the issue. One of the things that I think we've seen with FastFlux and with some other groups is that we start to, like a snowball rolling downhill, we start to pick up some of these side topics that may or may not be germane to the actual issue but are associated with it, and so maybe setting some boundaries. But of course, the preliminary working group or the actual PDP working group could just take that under advisement. But if they, through the course of their work, found that it was something else, they could, incorporate that into their recommendations. But just thinking that a template would probably be helpful to set some boundaries around that, as well as identify some information sources.
Okay, Mike.
Okay, I would just say that I'm all for anything that makes staff's job easier, but I'm definitely opposed to anything that makes the process take longer and makes it harder to initiate a request. And that's what Bertrand's proposal seems, in my mind, very clearly to do. He has several significant issues with his proposal as I'm looking at it here, but this one in particular. Putting together a 3-page brief, that is a lot of work. It's hard enough, frankly, putting together a motion and then shopping it around to like-minded counselors and that sort of thing. It's a lot of work to get a motion before council that you think will be approved, as it is today. And I don't think we have a whole lot of frivolous motions or frivolous requests for issues reports today. So, again, I think having a template and suggested information that ought to be provided is certainly a good idea, but it ought to be optional and otherwise not make it more difficult than it is today to request an issues report or raise an issue at council.
Yes, it's James.
Okay, James. Yep.
Mike, I agree with your concerns. We don't want anything that's going to drag the process out unnecessarily. I also feel that work is going to occur, and it's a question of can you preempt that with a proper template, or does it essentially defer that type of effort into the PDP working group itself? I mean, I can kind of see it falling both ways, that's all.
You can't push every issue into a bunch of finite little boxes. Some of these issues, they deservedly snowball. As you get into them and start to understand them, how they're affecting the various stakeholders, yeah, there are other issues come up. There, you have to allow that sort of flexibility.
So let me go to the queue. So we have, I see Paul and Liz. So, Paul?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. And Mike and James, I mean, we've both experienced this in FastFlux. I think I come down more on the side of Bertrand or James right now with the idea of a template, because to Mike's point, in some cases we may not know. So if we had a template and the requester wasn't sure, by identifying that, if there are gaps in knowledge or there are certain research needs, et cetera, I think that ultimately will be very beneficial in the policy work that will follow, because rather than launching into a PDP and then figuring out, oh my God, there are so many things we don't know, it'd be better to have that work done up front by the requester or by the specialized parties that are better positioned to develop information that can be used by working group participants, rather than launching a PDP, then figuring out and having some of these processes go on for what feels like forever, and ultimately coming to the conclusion that, you know what, we don't have policy recommendations here. So I kind of agree with Bertrand or James right now that the importance of having a template, of requiring some work up front, is very important. Not that we're going to necessarily get frivolous requests, but I think some requests that have been made in the past have been made with far less than a full appreciation of the amount of effort that's going to be involved, and or you know, whether this is appropriate for policy work. And again, using Bertrand's guide, I mean, it will look to council's input on whether this is an appropriate issue, et cetera.
Excuse me, Jeff, this is Glenn. Thomas Norton has just joined the call.
Oh, great. Hey, Thomas, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Liz, you actually joined at a good moment. I'm going to take Liz off. Liz, if you want to just make a point, then I'll get back to you, Thomas, and you've actually come at a really good point.
My very quick point was I think the rationale behind, the template, I don't think we want a lot of boxes, but I think there were some threshold questions we were trying to get at from the initiator of the request in the way of sort of baseline providing information on, you know, the scope of the harm or the scope of the concern to be addressed and the impact to the affected communities of the problem. And a good example I would point to, and then I'll stop, would be our current charter drafting on the post-expiration domain recovery issue, because I think in that context, for example, it would be very helpful to know sort of the evidence of harm, some specific examples, even if it's anecdotal, where we've heard this problem, are there specific regions or registrars that, you know, are being pointed to, some kind of factual baseline for the assertion that there is a problem. And that's where, you know, not a whole bunch of rationale, but just some factual baseline. And I'll stop.
Okay. Thanks. Let me first ask, I don't know, Marika or Margie, I don't know who has control over the Adobe, but it seems like everybody's got in the queue, so I'm not sure who's in the queue and who's or who just has microphones in front of them. I can't change that.
I can take away the microphones, and then we can start off again after after Thomas, if that's okay.
So, welcome, Thomas, to the call. What we're talking about now is actually in the stage of in the what's currently called the whole PDP, which is a confusing terminology in ICANN world. About just initiating a request for an issues report. And one thing that I thought was helpful that was circulated around the group several weeks ago was your internet draft that was published in February of this year on the creation of a birds of a feather. And I was wondering if you could kind of help us understand what kind of, why do people use birds of a feather groups? What is the amount of preparation in your experience that's done? And do you think the preparation at that beginning actually, how it helps the work of a working group if it's created and actually can make the process faster as opposed to bogging it down? I know I've asked a lot of questions there.
Yeah, so let me just respond by saying, first off, I think it's, the way the IETF works, bots have always been a crucial part to starting any kind of work effort. And, you know, we are a bottoms-up organization, which means that anybody can, at least in theory, propose work. And a bot is just a venue that allows people to propose doing work and discuss work and get down to the details of trying to figure out what does that work actually mean and is there actually agreement on what that work should be. Do people agree on what the scope is? Is there a shared understanding of the problem? Is there a shared understanding of the general direction where the solution should go? And so on. And, you know, the process and the idea for creating an actual working group, you know, there's the kind of the official process, which is somebody proposes a charter. The charter is taken to the ISG. The ISG reviews it and either approves it or, you know, modifies it or sends it back. And what the BOF is supposed to do is to generate support for a specific charter to form a specific working group. So it's part of the process of vetting the work, figuring out what the deliverables would be, scoping the effort, and showing that the community has agreement or consensus or whatever you want to call it, that this is an effort that ought to go forward and will produce a meaningful result. And they vary from being fairly informal to being quite formal, and it really just depends on how much preparation has been done and in some sense how high the stakes are. There's a sort of an assumption that you can't, I mean, anybody can propose holding a BOF, but an area director has to agree to host it. So somebody, there is some upfront, you know, quality control saying that if there doesn't appear to be support, they haven't done enough prep work, that it doesn't take place. It's a balancing act of trying to make sure that if the community is calling for some work in an area, that an attempt be made to support that effort, balanced without, you know, against not wasting people's time for efforts that clearly aren't going to garner support and aren't going to go anywhere. But the purpose of the BOF really is to get people in the same room to talk about the issue and get agreement on what to do. So it's tied into the whole notion that the way work, the formal mechanism for creating work have is to propose a charter, and so the BOFs are typically focused around garnering support for a specific charter and the specific work items in the charter. But I mean, certainly if there was, for example, an ICANN context, a group wanted to have explore a topic or have an issues report generated, it might well be worthwhile to have sort of a BOF where people go in and kind of summarize what the landscape looks like. Different people might say what their view on the topic is, and then people discuss specific work items that could be done. I mean, is this something that should be a PDP? Is this something that requires an issues report first? Is this something that something ought to be done, but we don't quite know yet what it is, or it's not clear in an ICANN context what that work should be, or is it really more properly done outside of ICANN or in a combination of ICANN and somewhere else? But it's a good place for the public to have both visibility to what's going on and also to have input into what work's actually done. Let me pause there.
Okay. Is there anybody that's got any... I'm not sure, so I know what an area director is because I'm familiar with the IETF. Do you want to just explain? You had said at one point it's for an area director to have approval.
Yeah, so the way the IETF is structured, the ISG is kind of the day-to-day management body. They oversee and manage all the working groups. And so the ISG approves all documents that come out. They approve all charters and things like that. So in order to start work, you have to get the ISG's approval. And the ISG consists of like 15 members. They're individually called area directors, and area directors are responsible for some set of working groups. So, for example, there's like a routing area that deals with routing working groups. There's a security area that deals with security working groups and so forth. So it's just a management structure. But the upshot is that you have to have an area director that kind of champions the work within the ISG as a whole, and the ISG as a whole has to sign off on the work. And there's a fair amount of give and take in the development of the charter where people argue about the wording and the scoping, and partly what you really want to have is make sure that people that actually read the charter understand the charter, and that, you know, if three or four people read the charter, they all agree on what the working group is going to do, and they don't continue to argue later about what they're supposed to be doing.
And is there any criteria that an area director has? You know, is there any documented criteria as to whether to decide if the Birds of a Feather group is worth it, or they kind of just use their judgment?
They use their judgment. You know, we have a fair amount of experience with that. In some sense, there is agreement in the group as a whole specifically what they look for is do people understand and agree on what the problem is that needs to be solved? Do people agree on the proposed deliverables, the specific documents that will come out from it? Do people agree, you know, that there's actually a critical mass of people to do the work since we're a volunteer organization? And then at a management level, the area director has to sort of say, like, well, do they feel like the group has a reasonable chance of actual success, or are the parties actually divided and unwilling to compromise and unlikely to actually agree on anything? The part of it is based on some fairly concrete metrics, like is there real support and are people willing to step up to the plate and review documents and be editors and things like that. And part of it is also just the experience of the area director and the ISG based on what they've seen from other working groups.
Okay. And one other thing I think is important, you said it said it a couple times, and it's definitely focused on your paper, but it's a point that the BOF is really for figuring out the problem, and you really discourage kind of discussions of solutions at that standpoint.
Right, but I mean, you know, of course, in the ITF context, the deliverables are typically standards, you know, documents that document technical standards. And one of the things we found repeatedly over the years is if people don't actually understand the actual problem, the real problem that they're trying to address, the solutions that get proposed won't address the actual problem. And if there's a disagreement about what the fundamental problem is, then you're not going to get agreement on the solution because different people have, will say, this doesn't solve my problem or my view of the problem, whereas somebody else might say it does. And so it's really, really important to understand what the underlying problem is so that you can, when you have a solution or a proposed solution, you can go back and say, does it actually solve the problem that people actually have?
Okay. Mike's got his hand up. Mike?
Yeah, just say that, all of that sounds very excellent. It is essentially what we do now on council. It's a few people that get a few other people to start working an issue. We've got to get a critical mass of folks to deal with this. Then we get, a majority of council has to approve a drafting team, has been our typical practice using it. And that drafting team really is your BOF as you've been describing it. It's people from all of the different constituencies, hopefully, participating and trying to define what the problem is and drafting a charter. So I completely agree with that. I feel like it's something that has progressed to become our standard practice, because there is one on council these days, and we should just really try to memorialize that. I certainly contrasted to what Bertrand is putting forward, which is, a fairly radical departure from what we're doing today and really requires, in my mind, quite a bit more upfront work.
So if I could just jump in here for a second again. One observation I'll make is there's two aspects of BOF that are important. One is they often do start kind of from a top-down where the area director of the ISG, who they're plugged into the community, they kind of have a sense for what problems are there, and they try to create a BOF, or they try to get people to go off and do a BOF. So you can sort of say that's a top-down design. But it's also the case that anybody can propose having a BOF, so that it doesn't rely on the management to control everything that's done. Now, the management still decides whether a BOF is ready to go forward or not, and whether it should be held, and whether it's useful to spend meeting time at it. But it allows people, the council or the management team, to basically say, well, if the community agrees that there's a problem here and they want to have a BOF, go ahead and do it. But show us the work and do the prep work for it. And then you can see by whether people actually deliver how much support there is.
And the BOF may or may not lead to a working group, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's not at all uncommon for a BOF to have no consensus with people disagreeing on the problem or disagreeing on whether a solution is feasible, or whether it's in scope for the ITF to work on and so on.
So going back to Mike, in the drafting team example that we've been using, is it your view that should happen before an issues report or after? Or should it be helping in the creation of the issues report?
I think it should come it could come either to draft a request for an issues report, or it could come after an issues report to draft a charter for a working group, or some other solution, or perhaps we use drafting teams to create plans for further research or fact finding that needs to be done before forming a working group. But the answer to your question is, you could have a council form one of those drafting teams at either stage, but it ought not be required in order to request an issues report. If you get this, it was already bumped up the thresholds now, it made it more difficult on council to have enough support to get an issues report. So I think that alone is enough check. You're not going to get a lot of frivolous support. I'm sorry, request.
Okay, Liz.
This is an important question, and I think we want to be thoughtful here. Here's my only concern. I think the one situation here I want to avoid is staff getting tasked to prepare an issues report without any foundation to do the report, and it's, I think this is where you get into maybe more of the nature of the request or the problem. Some issues reports are more like, let's just call it internal research. You know, look at previous contracts, like the registration of use, Mike, where, you know, look at an inventory of these previous contract terms and what they've said, or, you know, that kind of thing. But sometimes there's no foundation to actually write the issues report because there is no, and I go back to FastFlux on this, where other than the ESAC report, there was no foundation, there was no community discussion, there was no articulation of the nature of the problem or experience with the problem or analysis of the problem to draw on to even try to answer the kinds of questions that would normally be encompassed by an issues report, and it was just a unsatisfactory position to be in.
Well, okay, Liz, I mean, I certainly differ with you about how that working group started, and if staff felt that it didn't have clear enough direction at the time, then that would have been the time to clarify it.
We did, though.
Detailed, and there was a bunch of whereas clauses and council discussion about what the problem was.
Well, in that case, staff did say that we thought it was premature and why, and that there wasn't sufficient foundation, and the council opted to proceed anyway, and that's fine, and then we ended up doing all the research that might have gotten done up front after the fact. But it made it very difficult to accomplish the task of doing the issues report, and it, in a sense, led to a substandard issues report based on the standards we have today, because it wasn't informed by any kind of information in advance.
So is there, Thomas, is there anything, any requirements, any template, any forms to fill out in order to get a BOF?
Well, yeah, certainly there are, but it's pretty informal. I mean, essentially, you need an agenda, a proposed agenda, and the area director has to approve. But there is, it's generally assumed that you won't get approval unless you've done some steps in advance, which include, for example, writing a draft document that explains what the problem is and why, you know, the work is needed. You have a mailing list that's been created where people have a chance to sort of talk about the problem and you know, show there's some agreement for actually doing some work in this space and so on. The more advanced prep you can do, generally, the better the BOF goes. That's the overall theme. So we're always trying to make more work be done in advance on the mailing list, you know, and through writing, as opposed to doing it face to face.
So, Mike, listening to that, I mean, so your concerns are with timing and whether it delays the process. But is there anything that you could you would think would be a good idea as requirements, even in a template, before you can make this request?
The requirement is that you get 25% of both houses or a majority of one house. So that means you got to provide enough information to enough counselors to get their support.
So if we could, I mean, is there anything you could recommend?
Suggesting information that would be helpful for staff in preparing an issues report is obviously an excellent idea. But you shouldn't be imposing absolute requirements on how this gets done. You have to have flexibility.
Yeah, let me just add one thing, too. Even though the ICIF uses BOF a lot for creating new work, it's not technically required. You could have, you know, the technical requirement is that the ISG approve a charter or approve some work. So it can be fast-tracked, and you don't need a BOF. But in practice, we find that work is usually not that urgent that you can skip the BOF, and the BOF is a really good place to get everybody in the same room and get a pulse, that, you know, feel, get a sense of the community on whether they agree, you know, with the work, and they are comfortable with the work, they're comfortable with the scoping. I mean, I'm, you know, maybe guessing a little bit, but, you know, in the context of like an issues report on FastFlux, it might have been useful to have a discussion with the community about whether there's a lack of real data to draw on to start any work, and what do we do about that?
So, Mike,
that was realized, and we decided that the majority of council, the way to get it done was to form a working group, and that's exactly what happened. on the working group, the first step was to get pull data.
So, Mike, putting aside whether something should be required or not, because I think that's a different discussion. I mean, is it possible for this group to kind of suggest some guidelines, like in the IATF, some guidelines that would be nice to have or good information to have to make it easier for both sides of the council to actually have that vote, right? So let's say it's an issue in one house that's got some attention, but really hasn't really been brought to the other house, or they don't understand the scope of it. I mean, isn't there something we could recommend, even if it's guidelines or suggested, but not required?
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I think that might be one of the things this group might want to approach, and I see James has his hand raised, as to just, even if it's not technically required, to just, you know, encourage. Maybe it's an encouragement of people to use this other process even before an issues report is created. James?
Yeah, I just you kind of already touched on it, Jeff, but I just wanted to reiterate the recommendation that this be a guidance and not binding or straining on the work.
Sounds like someone just joined. Or maybe someone took us off mute.
I think that this information, again, shouldn't be to draw boxes, but just to provide some, you know, a little bit of a lay of the land for a particular issue. And, you know, to Mike's point, I think it's correct. It is an extra step. It is an additional work and delay. But I'm afraid it's one of those things where if you build too much flexibility into it and just kind of throw it over to a PDP, that the PDP working group can kind of, for lack of a better metaphor, drown in that flexibility without any sort of mileposts laid out on what they should be looking at. And again, all of this being recommendations and guidance, not you know, fencing in this this conversation.
Okay, Marika.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to support as well what Liz said, and I think that, you know, having more information will as well helping make an informed decision at the council level on whether to, you know, request an issue report or initiate the PDP. But I think something as well that is mentioned, you know, or has been raised in previous discussion, could there, for example, be as well an option to allow constituencies to state their position on the issue? Because if you... You know, if there are strong views or information that constituencies have on a certain issue, that might help as well to share at this stage if they would really say, well, we don't think it's an issue at all because of these and these reasons, or we really think that this issue should be addressed because we have evidence because of this, this, and this. That might be something as well that's helpful to inform the decision following an issues report whether to actually initiate a PDP.
But Marika, that could happen today.
Yes, but it's not happening. So I don't know if we need to provide more guidance or provide for more room. I mean, it doesn't happen for the issues report because there's no time to actually... Well, I think there's officially we cannot really ask certain parties to provide information and others not, and there's no real you know, request for information or open discussion on the issues report currently. So it doesn't really exist. I mean, it happens in the PDP once you actually have launched the process, but... you know, apart from some requests where certain constituency will identify, like what the ALAG did, saying we think this is an issue because of these and these reasons, that debate doesn't really take place at the initiation phase, or I haven't experienced it yet, at least.
Well, first of all, I think it does take place. There certainly is debate around whether to request issues reports often. Vigorous debate, you know. That's why the threshold is low, so we don't require a majority.
But I don't see the low threshold as a rigorous debate. It just means that it gets very easily accepted just if a few people think it's a good idea.
All right, let me just jump in a little bit. It sounds like what I'm hearing from most of the people on the group is that we think it's a good idea to build in some guidelines as to information that would help in the preparatory phase, even before an issues report is created, that it's a good idea to encourage people to have certain information, whatever that is, before an issues report is created, but not necessarily make it a hard and fast requirement, similar to the way the IETF does their birds of a feather, which is encouraged, but it's not a requirement to actually initiate a working group. Does that sound like an accurate statement? If Paul has a check mark up. Mike, does that sound accurate?
I think so.
This is James. I agree. I'm away from my keyboard right at the moment. So.
Okay. Does anyone disagree with that? Okay, good. So I think that the next part of the discussion, and not necessarily for today, is to scope out what are some of the useful things we could encourage and guidelines that we could create as to types of information that we would like to know as, members of the stakeholder groups that would be voting whether to initiate a issues report, but also things that staff would like to know that would be useful to them in creating the issues report. Again, none of this is mandatory, but it's the kind of information that we could put out in some guidelines or best practices. Will agree with that statement? It sounds like Marika's your hand raised. Is that new or is that?
No, sorry, my hand was still up from before. I'll just take it.
Oh, okay, sorry. Does that sound like an action item that we can work on? Thomas, my last question to you is, so you've observed the ICANN world for a few years now and obviously have been very active in the IETF. Is there any, from your standpoint, is there anything that you could recommend in the policy development process, things you haven't seen happen, things you'd like to see happen, things you think that have worked or not worked?
I guess I don't have a quick answer to that. I have to think about that a little bit. But, I mean, I sometimes have wanted to see the equivalent of a BOF where I get the sense that within the community there is a topic that's bubbling that people are talking about in the hallway, and it doesn't actually get discussed formally. And it would be nice to be able to have a venue for people to talk about something like, well, this is what we think is going on. Should we be doing something? What can we do? And a BOF would be the normal way you do that in the IETF. I just don't see an equivalent mechanism in the ICANN side for that. But maybe it goes on within the council, and I just don't have visibility into that so much.
I think the workshops at the meetings are about as close as they come to that.
But who proposes workshops, and who has the ability to do that?
You're right. That's a very mysterious process.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it's a lot of times it's maybe staff that hears issues talked about and then thinks a workshop's a good idea. It may come from other political sources too that thinks an issue should be discussed, but I definitely think that that's something that may be in our guideline. Last thing, Thomas, is that in your paper you emphasize that even the creation of a BOF, there's a lot of work and a lot of time that you emphasize in that draft that you should really be thinking about a BOF, at the previous meeting, which is 3 to 4 months before the actual BOF is held. That there's a bunch of work, and a lot of it you call is really socializing the concept. But just to kind of emphasize that this is not something that you come up with a few weeks before a meeting. Part of that driven because the IETF, and correct me if I'm wrong, you actually have to have your agenda item for the next meeting, what is it, like 6 weeks before?
Yeah, partly. Part of it is just that the vast majority of BOFs are focused on forming a working group, and that's a pretty big step. And it's not really acceptable for two or three people to get together and say, we'd like to propose work in this area, and have them run the show. You want to open it up and allow other people to also participate kind of even keel, which means they need to know about the effort in advance. They may want to write their own draft and have their own input. And you just can't get that to come together at the last minute.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions or comments for Thomas? Sounds like it's pretty quiet. Well, I definitely want to thank you for coming on and sharing that with us. I do think the draft is really helpful, and I think it will help us to come up with some guidelines or some, you know, encourage certain things to be done before or with a request of for an issues report.
I will glad to be able to help.
Hey, great. Well, you can stay on and listen, or you can drop whatever you feel like doing.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Thomas. So is there anything, so again, the action item is for us to kind of come up with, and one of the things that will help too is Thomas Roessler is going to talk to us, hopefully at the next meeting or soon, about what the W3C does as well, kind of similar to off, but in their own kind of how they prepare. So that will also be enlightening to help us come up with other things that may not be in the IETF's draft. Is there any other comments that people have on number two on our paper of, you know, the procedures for requesting an issues report? Liz, Margie, Marika, anything you want to add? Sounds quiet. So I'm thinking that the next item on our list is number three, which is issue scoping. There's really nothing in the current bylaws to talk about that. I think we kind of touched on this a lot. And actually some of this is actually useful for guidelines for the issues report. Questions like, should you identify a goal or an outcome of a PDP? You know, what is the goal? Is it necessarily to create a working group? Is it to create a best practices? Is it just to have a discussion? You know, one of those items, which actually jumps ahead a little bit to item number, kind of mixed in with item number, I'm scrolling down the list here, sorry, on my own, which is five, which is what can be the end result of a PDP. So if I can jump to that one as well, because we haven't really spent much time, you know, we have discussed in a number of the meetings previously, you know, part of the misconception or part of what some people believe is the role of a PDP is usually the thought that, you know, whatever the outcome of a PDP has to be a policy that's mandatory either on the registries, registrars, or, you know, the contracted parties. But, you know, we've also discussed in this group that it may be a perfectly acceptable outcome to have best practices. It may be a perfectly acceptable outcome to have some sort of recommendation to the ICANN. You know, it's not only contracted parties, right? But it could be, you know, we believe ICANN should be doing more in X, Y, and Z. So are there people that have thoughts of what they view as, or what we can write in this document as to potential outcomes of a policy development process? Very quiet. Well, I mean, we just rattled off a few of them, right?
There could be recommendations. For example, recommendations that are requests be made to FSAC or something like that. Or there can be recommendations of best practices that would apply to contracting parties or some subset of contracting parties. Or there could be consensus policies applicable to all contracting parties or either the registrars or the registries.
So it could be, for example, the first one is like a recommendation to ESSAC to study some issue that maybe we don't have the technical capabilities to look at.
Yeah, it came up in or maybe to the APWG or whatever, you know. Just determining that we've looked at this as much as we can as a working group, and we can't resolve it. So we think it would be interesting for somebody else to look at it.
Okay, so I have listed best practices, you know, for contracted parties or a subset of contracted parties, a recommendation to ICANN, ESSAC, or some other group that maybe can handle the issue, or we, as you said, we've kind of gone as far as we can go, and then the most obvious one, which most people believe is what it's for, is for the development of consensus policies to be implemented by the contracted parties. Are there any other outcomes that we can think of as a okay. I mean, in theory, it could be acceptable outcome of a PDP that nothing changes, that there are no or just an affirmation of what's going on today.
In theory, I mean, that's how one of the WHO is working groups ended up.
Jeff, this is James.
Yep, James, sure.
Well, one possibility would be, and maybe this falls under the heading of recommendations, but one possibility could be that a PDP could spawn successor PDPs. So, for example, if an issue was raised during the work that was not part of the core issue under study, but one of the recommendations could be future PDPs or breaking up the existing PDP into subdivided working groups. So that's just a thought. I don't know if that's ever happened before or if there's something precluding that from happening, but I just was thinking that was one possibility.
Well, I think it's happened in the sense of, well, not really future PDPs, but I think that's a good suggestion. I think that's right. What's happened before is, it's another item we'll talk about later on, not necessarily today, but which is, you know, obviously a PDP comes out with a result, and then, you know, what hasn't happened as much as it should is a recommendation of follow-up work that needs to be done with respect to either monitoring whatever the outcome is of the PDP, monitoring the performance of, if it required a contracted party or parties to do things, you know, monitoring those results, and, you know, maybe to have an assessment after the fact. That's kind of, that's where that has arisen, but your point is different in the sense of during a working group's discussions, a topic could come up that may be on the fringe of what the core issues you're trying to address or outside the kind of scope of the charter that's created, but you strongly feel that the work should be done. Therefore, it's a recommendation that, you know, a future PDP be started at some point to address that issue.
Correct. Or if for some reason the charter needed to be further subdivided or narrowed. Another thought would be any recommendations, I guess, and maybe I'm being too specific, but any recommendations for changes that would involve, like, I'm thinking for the IRTP, that would be a clarification of an existing policy or recommendations for additional work for compliance. I don't know if that falls under, again, the whole category of recommendations or best practices, but one specific outcome that could result from a PDP that's not necessarily new policy.
Those are good ones, and yeah, they fall under recommendations, but I think when we list them out, you know, in the category of recommendations, we can list those as separate items. I think that's good. Anybody else with comments as to what the outcome and result of a PDP could be?
Yeah, this is Margie. I have a couple comments. I've been analyzing this kind of separately for other reasons. In the category of advice to ICANN, I guess, something like recommending contract changes, I mean, I know that may be appropriate from time to time, and I look at that as an advice to ICANN type of work. Another type of work is technical specifications. Is that something that is a potential policy outcome?
Can you go into a little bit more as to what you mean by technical specifications?
Well, I think it's coming up already in the, isn't it the IRTP, where we're talking about whether IRIS would be an appropriate protocol to deal with some of the transfer issues. I know we typically don't get involved in very detailed technical spec issues, but I mean, like, what is IRIS or CRIS if that were something that were to be suggested? Is that an outcome of a possible outcome of the PDP process?
I didn't even realize that was going on.
Yeah, it actually came out of the GNSO resolutions, not this meeting, but the meeting before, right, Marika?
Correct. It's a specific request relating to whether IRIS could be a suitable option for some of the IRTP issues. It's not immediately going to the who is discussion, but
And that's a group of DSO people discussing it, or was it is it referred out to more technical minded?
It was a recommendation that was made, but it hasn't been implemented yet, or I think it's being reviewed in relation to the GLID. You know more about that as well. The other who is related motion that was up for discussion at that meeting.
Right. So that particular recommendation that was approved by the council, for now anyway, is incorporated by reference, if you will, into another motion that the council, resolution that the council approved on the 7th of May, having to do with the WHOIS service requirements and directing staff to do a synopsis or inventory of all sort of possible discussed technical service requirements for a replacement to WHOIS. And so staff is actually taking that on as a project. It's another example of a way in which the council can request that work be done, request that research be done, analysis be done independent from a PDP.
Okay. I mean, I suppose that kind of fits within the recommendations, I guess recommending that someone look at technical specs could be used for addressing policy issues. Is that kind of?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that's the context where it's come up.
Okay. Do you have anything else to add to that?
You talked about best practices, codes of conduct. Is that the same sort of thing? I know in the registrar agreement, for example, there's a placeholder for codes of conduct.
So, that's come up with for our code of conduct. So that's kind of like we could. Yeah, okay. Write that down. All right. Any other outcomes?
Another recommendation. Sorry, this is James. Another recommendation for follow-up or possibly even reassessment of the success or failure of a particular policy in addressing the issues that spawned them. So, for example, something that would cause a study to occur 12 to 18 months after a policy would be implemented to measure whether or not it was successful.
Okay. I'm writing these down, too. I know that I can't stop taking notes, but I like to take notes, too. All right. Any other comments on this one? All right. Well, I didn't want this call necessarily to take longer than an hour and a half because I know people have said that they have to jump off. But I'm trying to see what other areas we could just create some action items for next time. We haven't talked about the next call. Normally, we have our calls on Thursdays. We had it weekly, but it became a problem where people couldn't make it every week. And so we were getting pretty low attendance. But what I would like to do is have at least one more call prior to Sydney. So I think what I'll do is try to keep it to our normal Thursday time, which was I believe it was 10 a.m. Eastern, but to just send out a doodle for which of the Thursdays would work best for people starting on, we have how many weeks now? We have counting here. We have
4 or 11 June, Jeff.
The 4th or the 11th?
Yeah.
It might be just easiest just to do it for the 11th then, because the 4th might be a little too soon.
Because the 18th is already the Thursday before Australia, and I'm sure everybody will be traveling on that day.
Yeah, then why don't we just schedule a call for the 11th at the normal time?
Okay. And that time was also the same time now?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Yes. Okay, I'll do that, Jeff.
Okay. Is there any other comments or questions? We'll try to keep the dialogue going on the email. I know it hasn't been the greatest, but I think, Marika, is there anything you want to add, Margie, Liz?
It's Liz. I just, I think staff is going to try to write up these notes and incorporate it into this document using, you know, red lines. There were some very good comments and suggestions identified today, and I think it would be extremely helpful to have dialogue on the list prior to that call. So we're going to try to get our summary update out as soon as possible, and then we really encourage online discussion.
Yeah, and just this is Marika, just to encourage everyone as well to review the document in detail and just make sure that we haven't left out any issues or any questions that you feel should be included here as well.
I think staff may also take the first laboring oar going back to Bertrand's document, and hopefully he'll be on the next call, but to try to maybe correlate some of the discussion today with his proposal and see, you know, if we can harmonize those at all, or at least highlight the differences and the points that are being raised so we could come to some further discussion and ideas about that.
Okay, that sounds good. Is there anyone else that has any questions or comments? All right, thank you, everyone. Thanks for a good call.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff.